ABBA, knowing me, knowing you, it's BBC Radio Stoke. Hello, how are you? This is Perry. We're talking about, amongst other things today, what careers advice did you get in school? Really fun call from John, although not a lot of fun for him at the time. His careers advice back in the day consisted of, here's your national insurance number, you'll have that till the day you die. That was it. Out into the world of work. But maybe that was a time when jobs were plentiful and decisions were easy. Nowadays, though, what's going on? Well, there's a new book out written by local author Ed Williams. Cool. Oh, you got a copy there, right? Let's have a look. Is your school lying to you? Welcome to Ed. Welcome to the studio. Let's look at that.
Thanks very much.
Get the career you want, get the life you deserve. Are schools lying to students now, to children?
Well, I mean, I asked the question. It's not really a statement. I'm sure some are. I'm sure other schools are doing an absolutely perfect job. But it's definitely true to say that... Yeah, schools aren't necessarily getting it right when it comes to careers advice.
Okay, how do you know this?
Having been, I work as a recruitment consultant, it's my kind of day job, and increasingly you speak to employers, and you know they're very dissatisfied with the quality of the students that are coming through. You know, university isn't necessarily preparing people for the workforce, and once I started looking into that, I started to try and work with schools to say, hey, I think you could be maybe doing something a bit different. And no one wanted to talk to me.
Really?
No one. I mean, literally, I've contacted, I would say probably on several occasions, every single school in Cheshire West and Chester and Cheshire East, with the exception of maybe a couple. And, maybe three people responded. And they all assured me that they were doing everything that needed to be done. And yet, when I spoke to the students and the parents of the students who I'd worked with sort of on a private basis, they were going, it's awful, just awful.
And what's awful about it?
It's simply poor advice. There's an institutional need to, push people towards university almost regardless of their aptitude or even where their kind of career path might lie. And therefore, lots and lots of children are being sort of forced to, in order to kind of box tick an immediate destination, they go to university, they drop 50 grand on an education that they don't need for a job that's not going to materialise at the end of that degree. And I think they're being missold.
So is there some kind of conspiracy going on here then?
No.
I mean, it's an industry here, though, isn't it? The university is an industry.
Well, absolutely. I think that's the biggest thing. The moment... I think that it's almost two separate things that are kind of conjoined. So you've got, on the one hand, you've got the universities who are... Once the moment you kind of start charging fees for something, it becomes, like any other kind of financial transaction. People demand, satisfaction, really. So they come out of university, the expectation is they're going to get a job off the back of that, and they've spent a lot of money in order to try and ensure that. But the grade inflation within universities, because you're spending that money, the expectation is that you should get a first or a 2-1, because anything less than that is sort of seen as lesser, certainly from a CV perspective. So the grade inflation is gone up by, I think, I don't have the stats in front of me now, but it's like about 40% grade inflation over a 5-year period.
But grade inflation is always, it's highly sort of... what's the word I'm looking for? Speculative, isn't it? There's a great deal of speculation whether grades do get inflated or not. We had a problem, didn't we, over GCSEs with this?
We had a bit of an issue, but the difference is that universities are allowed to mock their own exams. So, in essence, I think if you allow...
But how do you prove it's grade inflation and not students getting better?
I think it, statistically, it would be beyond anomalous, because I do have a few of the things here. So, it's... 26% rise, 26% of people got firsts last year. In 1994, it was 7%. That's sort of beyond, that's across the board. So that's a very, very large kind of jump.
And so the perverse incentive you would allege would be that because it's about money now and students are properly investing in their own futures, they want to get value for money,
exactly.
And that's what's propelling.
But also as well as a sell to you know, a prospective candidate or student that's going to be coming to the university, if you say to them, hey, look, you know, last year X amount of students got a first or a 2-1, that's how good our teaching is, then, you know, that's quite a compelling argument.
You're in a competitive market.
Exactly, right? Absolutely you are. But kind of also alongside that, even Russell Group University is allowing the tariff for, you know, entry levels for a lot of the key subjects, so they can't get the people in to the thing. But what that means is that people...
So it's easier to get in. Now, the Russell Group the Russell Group are the top group.
Yeah, essentially, they're kind of the older, kind of more established, better reputation type things. They're quite heavy on research rather than sort of pure learning. So they do quite a lot of stuff, you know, with other universities as well, which, you know, in theory should give you a kind of a more rounded...
How does this education work internationally, though? Does this mean our universities are slipping down the international league tables?
Yes and no. I think it's certainly until the kind of the full impact of Brexit, you know, there's going to be a lot of visiting professors from Europe that are going to kind of take their research grants and their money and, you know, their knowledge out of the country. And I think that we're going to see a greater impact on our standing in the world market. I mean, Oxford and Cambridge obviously still performed very well, but a lot of these metrics, they're quite subjective,
any case. Getting back to school then.
Yeah.
So the advice seems to be university or bust.
There's definitely a push towards that. I think the bigger issue actually is there's not really the funding that there used to be. So a lot of the careers advice stuff was done by an organisation called Connections. So that was being kind of disbanded. And there are still schools that have people who are ex-Connections in there. The trouble is, it's kind of seen as a nice to have rather than a must have.
Yeah,
I've always been of the mindset that a school is there to prepare people for their life, for their jobs, and, you know, kind of everything that entails. And I think it's sort of seen as, you know, if we've got time, we'll get to it. And more often than not, it's ceded to teachers who, not any kind of bad against them, but they simply don't have the necessary.
Are you not just protecting your industry, though? Are you feeling sore that this work's going?
No, because I'm not a careers advisor. You know, I have no sort of skin in the game. I've got three kids, and that was why I kind of looked into it, because I was like, okay, well, I need to make sure that they're getting the education they need.
So, I mean, if you ask those people who are supportive of the aims and the current situation with universities, and the aim, I think it was the New Labour aim of getting 50% of all students to go through the university system, they would point out that people who go to university earn thousands over a lifetime, many thousands more than those who don't earn a degree.
That's true, but also it was the New Labour that brought in the fees in the first place. So, I mean, I was pretty much the last year that went without fees. There is no way I would recommend to my kind of former self, you know, now, that I should have gone to university to do what I did.
Has your degree helped you?
In no way. The only thing that it did, I think, was possibly give me a little bit of clear water between school and actually having to do something for a living, because I was thoroughly feckless. So I think...
Where are we all?
Exactly. So, I think in that regard, it was probably not the worst thing, just to kind of keep me off the streets, because I was completely ill-equipped to deal with the pressures of any meaningful job.
Is the answer here that the country needs more apprenticeship schemes?
I think that the apprenticeship stuff is a massive sort of shot in the arm, or it could be. It's, you know, already it's sort of failing. The new apprenticeship levy... it's apparently been described as Byzantine by anyone who's tried to sort of figure it out.
Tell me what this is.
So essentially it's large companies, anyone with I think it's a wage bill of about $3.5 million a year, is they have to pay a percentage, a small percentage of that wage bill into a pot that would then get topped up by the government to then take on apprentices.
That sounds like a great idea. Why is that not working?
No one really knows how it works. Apparently the paperwork involved in it is just very difficult, and it's whether it's a tax or whether it's a levy or how they're kind of pitching it, and no one's really kind of getting on
with
it.
So it's not working, basically.
Well, I mean, I'm not a large business.
This is a crucial part of the critique of your book, though, is that schools are not preparing people properly.
Yeah.
If there's an apprentice system that's not worth having faith in,
I think maybe
the schools are not to blame.
I think it's a combination of things. I think that there is the apprenticeship stuff has been, I think it was going in the right direction. It was certainly, everyone was kind of getting skilled up. There has been a big drop statistically. It's unhelpful because a load of people took on apprentices before the apprenticeship levy came into force. So it made the kind of the drop off look more stark.
Right.
I think there's obviously still certain issues with people not kind of paying their apprentices in the right way, and you know, whether it's really just kind of busy work for you know, on the cheap. But I think actually, fundamentally, there is still both societal, scholastic, and parental kind of misgivings about apprenticeship versus university, and whether it's seen as relevant or as valid.
Sort of snobbishness.
Yeah, yeah, basically. There's definitely a snobbishness.
I mean, because I'm a parent of a child of 11 and another one of 9, and so I'm starting to
see this stuff
is coming down
the horizon.
Line.
Yeah.
And unless they're really going to be brilliant, I think my advice will be get an apprenticeship. But for someone who's of my mind, is that going to be doable? Will the apprenticeships be there?
I think they absolutely will be. I think that, you know, there's so in December last year they launched, DfE launched a new kind of initiative, which is the new careers strategy, and I think the apprenticeships are going to go sort of hand in glove with that. It's making a lot of this stuff statutory kind of requirement. You have to do this now, rather than just sort of assuring people that you're doing it. I think apprenticeships absolutely are, you know, a big kind of exciting idea that's going to really help out a lot of people. The issue historically with apprenticeships is that, you know, you talk about degrees, people earn money, more thousands over their lifetime. The modern apprenticeship, we don't have the statistics to back it up. So actually, by...
That statistic may be null and void.
Yeah, well, yes. Yeah, basically. So 30 years down the line, we'll have a much clearer view of kind of whether the apprenticeships works, because we'll have seen like an entire generation go through that will have earned.
So you're a Cheshire lad, and you've got kids in the county, and you've tried to speak to Cheshire schools. Will you try again? Are you going to go back to these schools?
Well, I think, I mean...
Armed with your book?
Armed with my book. Well, I you know, I've been waving it near windows. You know, I'm not really allowed on the property. So, you know, I do my bit.
If you go into a school saying, is your school lying to you, with a book with that on the title, maybe.
Well, if they're not lying, they should have nothing to fear.
Right.
Obviously, the title is sort of supposed to be deliberately provocative, but it simply posits the idea that, you know, is your school doing everything it can do to help you get the career that you want? And if the advice is, oh, go to uni, that's not necessarily always that helpful, and therefore, you know, there is more they could be doing. You know, when a teacher who's maybe 23, 24, and I've seen this, you know, that even though I don't get to work with many schools, many invite me in just to go, hey, you know, come and have a chat before telling me that they do all of it. They, you know, they're like 23, 24. With the best will in the world, they simply don't have the experience to say, oh, here's how you do your own CV and stuff.
Fascinating to speak to you. How old are your children?
Oh, they're much too young.
Right, okay. Yeah. So you're
7, yeah. 4 and 1.
So. Yeah, okay, so you've got a long way to hopefully... well, you've done your groundwork already, but hopefully you'll be able to give them the best. They won't listen to you anyway, whatever advice you give them.
Although 78.5% of people in this country say their only careers advice that was valid came from their parents.
Interesting. So. Children, take note. Ed, great to speak to you. Thanks for coming in. And it looks like an interesting read. Hopefully one day the schools will start listening to you. Let's get there. By the way, if you've got anything on that, maybe you have children at school at the moment, you can either disagree or agree with what you've heard from Ed. Give us a call, 01782208008. Is your school lying to you? Let's get the latest travel news now from David. Looking like